Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 176, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 4, episode 9, Something Blue, and Angel, season 1, episode 9, Hero. My name is Selena, and I am joined by superfan Natalie and newbies Kristen and Brittany. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Newbies and oldies alike. This is very exciting. I'm very excited to get into talking about both of these episodes for very different reasons. So that's going to be a good discussion, I hope. So before we get into the discussion, as always, we want to remind you of how you can get in contact with us to leave us your spoiler-free feedback on these episodes. You can email us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Okay, so we're going to start off with fun facts, if you somehow is still not sure who's who. This might help. So let's start with Kristen this week.
You know, it's still shocking that I always forget about fun facts until you say it. And then I'm like, crap, I have to come up with a fun fact. I'm going to say that my fun fact is I'm really excited that my brother's in town. And he lives about 2.5 hours away from me. And so when he shows up randomly, I get very excited. Mm-hmm. And he's in town today. And I'm hoping that we get to hang out a bit. So that's my fun fact. Not very pop culture-y, but I'm very excited today.
But super fun.
Yeah.
And Natalie, what about you?
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Good morning. Good night. I'm Natalie. I have the most annoying and recognizable voice, so this probably isn't necessary. But my fun fact this week is that, as some of you may or may not know, Brittany knows very well, I'm in the process of catching up on Supernatural. And the last episode I just watched in the beginning of season 7 was guest starring James Masters and Charisma Carpenter as a married couple. And it was a really bad episode. They were fantastic, but oh, it was a very bad episode. But they were really good, and it was really funny, and they had good chemistry, and it was fun to watch them. So that was a thing that happened to me this week that was funny. And I didn't know that it was coming until, like, I didn't read it in advance. I only saw it on the credits, and I was like, it said James Masters, and I'm like, what? And then it said Chris McCarpenter, and I was like, what? Both of them? So they were really fun. It was a really stupid episode, but it was still fun. So, yeah, that was exciting for me
this week. Yeah, I think that's back when we were still doing Fandom Collide titles on Hypable. And there were a lot of those when we were reporting on that. I think I may have still been covering Supernatural at that time because I remember being very excited.
Going a bit deeper into that, it's the first episode written, well, since season one, since the racist truck episode in season one. It's the first episode written by a pair of writers who are, like, universally panned by the Supernatural fandom as, like, the worst writers the show has ever had, like, to the point where people ignore their episodes and are like, oh, yeah, if it's written by them, it's not canon. Like, it's totally out of character and it's not real. So, and immediately I was like, oh, this episode is, it's very bad. So, they're back, so perhaps the quality will drop in my Supernatural experience. But if they keep having those kind of guest stars, it will be fun.
It'll be fine. Yeah. That's amazing. And Brittany, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact, I was watching Angel, and when the demons have their little spiky faces, I can't watch it because there's this thing called trypophobia, where if certain geometric patterns like make you really anxious, and their faces make me really, really anxious. It's like, it's usually like a bunch of like dots in weird like proximity to each other. So like some polka dots are fine, but like if you like flip over like a fern leaf and it has all the seeds on the bottom, like I cannot look at that. Or it's really weird. So their faces were one of those cases. So it was a very difficult episode for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I have that pretty badly about organic things. I don't usually have it about stuff in special effects because this is not as bad. But like that thing of like it's very usually like clusters of holes.
Yes, clusters of holes are really bad.
That's what it is, like a lotus or like an organic piece, like inside an organ or something like that. Like, it's a weirdly common thing that the human brain hates, like, for some reason, and it's interesting.
So that sort of brings a whole new, like, dimension to when Doyle was like, maybe this would have been a face you could learn to love.
Like, I would have been like, nope, I'm out. Nope, deal breaker, Doyle.
Wow. That's so interesting. That is a fun fact. And yeah, wow. So I guess my fun fact isn't really like, it's kind of short. My fun fact is that I specifically requested, actually, this is the first time that I've specifically requested to be on an episode of Rewatchable, and not for Something Blue, actually, funnily enough, even though that is arguably the better episode, but because of Hero, for, I guess, reasons that we'll go into in the discussion of that episode, because I don't want to derail the conversation. But yeah, this should be very interesting. I'm very happy that we could, that Caitlin scheduling magic could make this happen. So without further ado, I guess we should get started and talk about the Buffy episode Something Blue, a big fan favorite for obvious reasons that I'm also very, very excited to get talking about. The synopsis written by Ariana reads, in this episode, everything is precious because Buffy and Spike are getting married and demons are chasing after Xander. When Willow's angst gets the better of her, the world turns turvy-topsy and everything she says comes true. Giles goes blind but still has to bear witness to Buffy's adorably annoying love fest, and Xander is attracting demons far less sexy than Anya. So there we go. Really interesting episode. Really fun twist of expectation, and I can't wait to start talking about it. The first part of the discussion is actually about Riley, who was in this episode. Ariana says he's got all the right lines at all the right times. I'm not sure what to make of that. What do you guys feel about Riley at this point?
His hair when they were sitting on the blanket was like in perfect. It was perfect. And Buffy's hair looked really great, too. And Karen and I both mentioned it. Like, we kind of at the same time were like, they both have really good hair in this episode. Like, oh, my God. No, I like Riley quite a bit. I know he's, you know, got some hidden things. But so does Buffy. And I think it's kind of interesting watching them, like, interact without telling the other about things. And it's always fun to kind of see people who have crazy secrets, like, mm-hmm. play around them. So it's been good fun.
Yeah, and I like both of them when they're not addressing that. Like, I like Riley a lot better when he's not in the, what is it, the Institute or in something?
Initiative.
I knew it began with an I. Yeah, so I like Riley a lot when he's, like, goofier and trying to, like, win Buffy over, and when he's, like, in the elevator with his friends, that type of Riley I like. So the fact that he wasn't, and that whole thing wasn't the focus of this episode, Riley's so cute. When he's like, oh, I didn't ask you, maybe I was just practicing. Like, that was just so adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot to like about Riley. I will say, though, their discussion of, quote-unquote, driving, oh, I don't like it. Oh, I don't. I think it makes me so uncomfortable.
Oh, I forgot about that.
It got a bit
that.
Yikes. Yeah, it got a bit. I was like, oh, all right.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah. I really liked his reaction to the marriage thing when he was just like, yeah, I need to go away now.
Yeah.
And she was just freaking him out. I did think that was a cute scene. But I mean, why talk about Ruffy or Biley or whatever the hell their ship name is when we can talk about Buffy and Spike, which was the sort of main point of this episode. Completely hilarious. I don't know if any of the newbies were expecting something like that.
No.
Taking your silence as a no.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Still not sure I'm comfortable with it.
Well, let's talk about that, though, because Ariana has it up here as though, like, is this the birth of a new ship? Whereas what I sort of see it as is this is, like, it's so funny because Like, this is the way to get them to bake out and be like that, because they wouldn't be like that otherwise. But it is sort of a very smooth transition from them, like, she calls it flirting, but their, like, intense hatred of each other, like, it flipped on a dime and suddenly it was, like, the opposite kind of passion. I thought that was interesting.
I'm kind of curious about, like, what's meant to have happened, if you know what I mean. Like, is it literally just that they fell in love, or did they, like, remember a history that didn't happen, if you know what I mean? Because, you know, at one point he says to her, like, you know, you said you weren't going to say Angel's name or whatever, but we never saw that conversation. Like, are they meant to have, like, had a history that we don't remember, or that they, you know, that only exists in their head? Or is it literally just, you know what, let's stop fighting and get married, like, on the spot. Like,
you know what I think is so interesting is that all that Willow says is, why doesn't she just go marry him? She doesn't say, why doesn't she just fall madly in love with him? Or why doesn't she just get all, like, start making out with him? Like, all of that was, like, you know, that came of it of its own, maybe a little bit more. Or at least I like to think it did. It's a very interesting scenario, because they were actually their storyline, or what Willow said, that's the only thing that didn't happen exactly how she said it, which is fun. I think it's fun. I think it's hilarious to see them together like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Ariana seems to think that they are it's the best, least annoying couple to show up in the series. Newbies, do you feel like that it's the best, least annoying couple to show up in the series? Like, if it was made, like, well, I mean, they're very annoying in this, I would say, but that's why it's funny.
Oh, but that's, like, so good, though.
You know, but yeah, Ariana's assessment of a most adorable, least annoying couple. Do you guys feel like that is the right way to describe this ship?
Yes, because when they're not being, like, gross with one another, the little bit of, like, lines that they have in exchange are so good that you, like, you know, you can,
like,
see
the snarky,
yes,
like, yeah.
Like, you can see, like, they would play off each other really well. Every line is not a dramatic parting of ways and the biggest love affair in the world, where, like, you know, it rains rose petals every time they look at each other's eyes. Instead, it's, like, funny and playful, and like, they get that they have their differences, but those differences are kind of what draw them together. And I could definitely see them working out and being together. But the thing that annoys me about Buffy were the things that annoyed me about her with Angel, and the things about Spike were the things that annoyed me about him with Drew. And those are little things that I don't think you can completely get rid of. Like, Buffy gets, like, really girly and flirty and, like, pouty, and I hate that so much. And then you have
it was so over the top this
yeah and
episode.
Then you have Spike, who's just, like, a little too intense with the physical stuff every now and then, and that annoys me with him with Drew. So
yeah, that's a really good point, like, that they are acting in this way, the way that they tend to act. Like, this is how they act when they are in love with someone, if you know what I mean. So that's true. Buffy really does like to, like, she really does go into, like, I'm just a girl when a guy likes her, as opposed to, like, just being
herself.
Cool. I don't know. Yeah. Like, and he, you know, Spike is famously very obsessive and attentive and passionate about love. So, yeah.
But that's, you know what I really love about them, though, and I think that's, like, not, like, talking shipping necessarily, because I approach Buffy very much like, I don't really ship anybody, because that's not, like, the dynamics of the characters are, like, often I prefer, like, non-romantic pairings or friendships in the show, like Giles and Buffy, for example, which is another cute thing about this episode. But I think what I love, and that's kind of what Brittany says too, is that they just play so well off each other. Like, we saw that back in season 2 when Spike turned on Angel to work with Buffy. Like, that was some of the best, like, scenes of that season, because those two actors just play off each other so incredibly well. So I think any chance at seeing those two characters thrown together, like this episode, obviously, like a one-off, because they're acting like themselves, but not like themselves with each other, but also just them. Like, when she found him And he was like just standing there, by the way, spoiler alert, that was the best thing on that episode. And he was immediately like, oh, this is where they kept me. Like, he doesn't try to run away from her. He doesn't, well, I guess he couldn't, but you know what I mean? Like, it's just, they are sort of hinging on kind of working together sometimes. And I love that dynamic of the two of them.
That's really interesting to me as well. And it's because Giles said something in this episode as well, you know, when Spike's tied up in the bath at the beginning, and I mean, the fact that he came for them for help in the last mm-hmm. episode, you know, mm-hmm. like, help me, help me. It's like, I don't know, like, does he think they're friends? I don't know.
Yeah, but he kind of does, I think.
Well, I love it. But when they're in the bath, when he's in the bath and Giles, you know, he's sort of saying at the beginning, you know, as soon as I talk, you know, you'll just kill me. And they're, you know, they're like, oh, Spike, we're not just going to kill a harmless creature or whatever because he can't do anything at the moment. It's interesting that they won't kill him in cold blood, if you know what I mean. That they're like, you're a vampire. We know that you have killed many people in the past. Like, just because he's not able to right now, like, not that I want them to kill him, but you know what I mean? Like, they know that he is a killer who has killed many people, including people that they know. And it's not apparently not grounds to just take him out regardless of what he's doing right now. Like, it has to be in hot blood, like in the moment of a
They're not going to execute him. Right.
That's interesting to me that they wouldn't, if you know what I mean, given that they know, like, he is evil and he has killed, like, many people. What do you think that it would vibe badly if they did that? Like, I know, like, the audience really likes him. But,
with
like,
me, yeah.
But, like, with any demon or with any vampire, for them to just, you know, for it not to be, like, in a combat situation. Because Buffy sees vampires. They don't have to be biting someone. She just sees someone, knows they're a vampire, and is like, hey, you're a vampire, let's fight, and I'll kill you. But they know how bad he is.
Mm-hmm. It's more that he can't defend himself. Like, that's, like, it's not a fair fight. Because that's kind of like, I remember when Buffy and Faith went into that lair and lit it up. While the vampires were sleeping or whatever, like, that's sort of like, ooh, that feels a little bit icky. And I sort of feel like both shows actually explore that a lot with the line between when is it actually like, when do they actually misuse their power? And I think Buffy sort of, what one of the many great things with bringing in Spike in this position in relation to the group is that they have to constantly ask themselves that question. You can't just kill him because he's annoying. You know, and technically you probably could say, okay, well, you have done this and this and this and this. Now we're going to stake you. But that's a decision that they can't bring themselves to make. And I think that says a lot about the kind of people that they are, you know. It's one of the most interesting things about the show. And just having Spike in any capacity in that context is does a lot for the layering of everyone else, I think. One other thing that I loved about this little Buffy and Spike marriage thing was that he still got super jealous of Angel. I thought that was hilarious. Like, that thing between Angel and Spike just never ends. Angel would have liked the flowers. I thought it was amazing. So Spike sort of is still hanging around, like we kind of talked about. He's still kind of laying down the truth of every situation. He's still, again, an interesting character who sees through all of the BS and kind of knows immediately that Willow is doing terribly. And everyone else, especially Buffy, but also Giles, are very, very quick to sort of ignore her pain. And I don't really know how to feel about that.
And they even say later, you know, when they're talking privately, you know, like, they're like, we're all over it. I mean, I don't know. Is that just kind of we meant to just take that as like a kind of, well, this is what people are actually like. Yes, everyone's actually annoyed by the other one whinging, but to be a good friend, we just don't talk about it. Like, is that how you feel? Like, do you get annoyed at your friends when it's not involving you?
No, see, that's the thing, is that I think especially Buffy, like, when she's on that date with Riley and Willow comes and she's like, oh, no, and it's Riley who has to say, come on, sit down. I think that's so awkward because, you know, Buffy had been through such an intense heartbreak and now Willow is basically going through the same thing she went through and Buffy is just kind of over it. So there you go. She totally had it coming. You can go marry Spike. But no, it is an interesting thing. And I think they do come to sort of a conclusion at the end of it because, you know, they have that talk about pain and stuff. Any other thoughts on Spike in this episode?
Well, I thought you brought up an interesting point before you kind of like launched into talking about everyone ignoring Willow, where Spike is the one to realize it because I think he's more in tune with humanity because he can't feel anything, I think. Like, he can feel...
He can feel.
Well, yeah, but not... He doesn't really form any connection unless, like, it's with Drew, I guess. So I feel like he's just more in tune because he's an outsider and, like, wants these human relationships but can't have them. So it's like, well you guys are stupid to not realize it when I can realize everything that's going on because I'm so apart from it.
I think it's actually like it's kind of like that. I sort of read it more as him being very, very, very in tune with it because one of the things that happened when Spike became a vampire, I think, is like he, you know, his emotions are very heightened and he actually does feel all of these things. The thing that Spike can do is he can also, like, I think, emotionally distance himself from that. So he can say, oh, Willow is clearly hurting, but I'm still going to kill her. It's only if it, like, if there's a good reason for him not to kill her, then he won't. And that's sort of the rational way that Spike approaches the world. So in that sense, I guess he is kind of removed from it a little bit. But I do think he feels a lot of feelings.
I think he certainly feels a lot of feelings.
Is that a good way to sum up Spike?
Like number one on the character, number one point on the character summary.
Feels a
maybe.
Lot of feelings.
And there's definitely some great bits with him observing the group. Yet to come, I will say that about this season. So
for sure, yeah. And it's such a great way to. I just want to like I keep saying it's such a great way to bring him into the show and have him be still a villain and still their enemy, but they're just stuck in this kind of stalemate. It's not like because he's an evil vampire. It's not like he's gonna switch sides because that doesn't make any sense, and it's not like he's gonna pull an Angel or anything. So he's literally just stuck with them, and no one really knows why, and they don't know how to deal with it.
Newbies, do you watch any other shows where the characters like would have just or do like sort of kill demons or whatever, you know, or enemies in cold blood? Like, hey, I know that you're evil. Just because I'm not catching you red-handed right now, we're still going to kill you for existing, if you know what I mean. Like, is this unusual that they're not killing him?
Oh, like Supernatural is a good example of that with the werewolf woman.
Yeah, they definitely... Yeah, I just got to the bit, Selena, as well, with the with Jewel State, like with the Kitsune, where Dean, behind her. And so that's a very good example of, like, I'm going to kill you even though you're not doing anything because, on principle, I have to kill you because I know what you did in the past. So it's exactly the opposite of that. But, like, I don't know, what about all of those other shows with demons and stuff? Or just morally, like, do you think that if Buffy... did this kind of stuff in cold blood, or if Giles or like any characters, you know, did this stuff in cold blood to a demon or a vampire, that they'd kind of look bad? Like, that, do you think that the show has to not do this to keep a moral high ground, or what?
I'm trying to like, I'm racking my brain trying to think of a situation. Like, I feel the only thing that person I can come up with is Bonnie Bennett in Vampire Diaries will kill people just because she knows what they've done. Like, she doesn't have qualms, but she's a witch, and it's kind of different. I don't know. Like, she has no qualms about taking out a vampire, even if they are not currently attacking or hurting someone, just because she knows what they've done, and it's against everything she believes or whatever. So... I don't know, but I'm having trouble, like, coming up with an instance in which, you know, Damon or someone else has taken advantage of someone's, like, inability to fight back.
Well, you know what? Actually, like, there's an interesting thing that I'm watching a show called Wynonna Earp, which just started, which I'm, like, I'm in love with it. It's amazing. And on that show, she's, like, a demon hunter who has to hunt down these things that her ancestor has killed, and then they come back every time there's a new heir and she has to kill them all over again. And there's been instances where she's killed them just because she has to. Like, there's no reason other than, well, they're on her list, you know? So she kind of becomes like a semi-antagonist because she actually kills people that are really nice just because she has to. So that's kind of like a similar thing, I guess. But what I really love about both Buffy and maybe more Angel in this regard is how much time they spend setting or having these moral situations, like setting them up and exploring them in different ways. Like Angel, even Angel, like the episode we're going to talk about in a bit, it's maybe the first time that the Angel is protecting demons in this episode. Like, yeah, they are half blood, but that doesn't really matter. Like, they are demons and he's trying to save them, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think, you know, when Buffy really, you know, started, like right in the season one or whatever, you know, before Angel with the soul was introduced or kind of as he was getting introduced, there was this very hard line from most of the characters of like, it's
human good and demon bad.
Not human equals must be evil, as opposed to just a whole bunch of different species of thing that are just getting by, you know, like, and some of them are intrinsically evil and some of them are not intrinsically evil.
Mm-hmm. It's all about right now, like defining like the lines of good and evil.
Person and personhood, not just good and bad, but like, because there are people that are good and bad on this show as well. But Buffy's kind of like, well, it's not my business if they're good or bad, but all demons are bad. But they sort of, you know, there are plenty of, you know, Doyle is just the first example, like plenty of examples of supernatural creatures that are, you know, not necessarily evil, and just, you know, whether they're considered a person, like, you know, Spike and Drew, you know, when they were introduced, you know, like Buffy was like, you don't love, you're not a person, you're just a whatever, like, you know, you're not a real person with feelings, and they're like, yeah, we are, and yes. And I'm not sure what point, I'm not sure is whose side the show was on at that point, if you know what I mean, if the show wanted us to believe Buffy or if the show wanted us to believe Spike and Drew. But I feel like as the show goes on and with Angel, it's definitely like an exploration of
morality, of humanity, of what it means to be
a person. Yeah, like whether you're human or not, if you're a person who, you know, is responsible for being a good person or a bad person or whatever. Right.
Exactly. They basically set up this whole thing in the season one about, well, if you have a soul, you're good, and if you don't have a soul, you're bad. And then they spend the entire rest of the Buffyverse bringing that down. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like saying, actually, it's not like that. And I think, ironically, Buffy the character is one of the people that is most firmly holding on to the demons are bad, people are good thing, because it's her job. She's the Slayer. She has to think in those lines, whereas everyone else is like, and it's so interesting. And it's going to get really interesting from here on out for sure. So any newbies listening and you guys, if you're into that kind of thing, then look out for that because it's going to get interesting. Speaking of people who are people and who maybe like mess things up a little bit is Willow, who obviously the entire episode sort of hinged on her. It's funny because on Twitter we were talking about how whereas Xander in season two went through with his spell to Cordelia, Willow didn't go through with her spell to Oz, but this episode she actually did go through with her episode. She was gonna bring him back, sort of quote unquote, against his will. What ended up happening is that she just ended up unintentionally inflicting her will on everyone else. And what Ariana sort of notes is that, you know, is she becoming stronger as a witch because she can perform really difficult spells even though she can't really seem to control them? So newbies, Kristen, what are your thoughts on Willow and everything that's happening with her? Her pain that the demon sensed and stuff.
She's definitely seems to be getting stronger, whether it's because of her pain or whatnot, who knows. But like when the vengeance demon guy like takes her away, he can sense her power. Like he's the only reason he takes her away is because A, she's inflicted pain upon her friends, and B, he could sense the level of power brewing in her. So, you know, she's never had anything like that really happen before. So I can definitely see that she's growing in strength, whether or not it's because of what's going on around her, who knows. But I would say she's definitely getting stronger.
Yeah, and she kind of mentions stuff really casually about spells that is like, oh, okay, that's like really dodgy, bit much, you know, bit unethical, you know, like there was one that she mentioned in this episode that I can't quite remember. in the last one, in Pangs, she was like, you know, there's some really, really cool spells that can really, you know, be amped up with addition of an ear to the mix, like really matter of fact, like no big deal, like, you know, whatever, we'll just cut off some ears for our cool spells. And she's sort of just casually mentioning these practices that are like a little bit not very ethical. And I'm like, oh, okay, interesting. So, yeah. Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Well, I love how like all of the stuff with Willow sort of becoming stronger is happening kind of in the background, because I think we were talking about this like back in seasons one or two, how Willow and Xander kind of melded into each other because neither of them really had a thing. And she was kind of like the research girl, but she sort of developed this power on her own and is kind of like, suddenly she, like more and more, she suddenly is a really integral part of the group because of her magic, but it sort of came like very organically and very like step by step, you know? Mm. And sometimes, as in this episode proves, like sometimes I guess when you have magic, like the thought of being able to do something like, oh, well, I have the means to bring my Oz back to me.
Yeah, the fact that like she said that, she was like, if I was good, he would have stayed. And I'm like, really? Like, really? Mm. You want to Tom Riddle your boyfriend? You know, like, you want to non-consensually force him by magic to love you and stay? Like, not that I think Oz doesn't love her, but, like, when she said that, just, like, so offhand, I was like, wow, okay, that's really...
Yeah, it's interesting.
You're thinking some good thoughts here, Willow. And by good, I mean not good.
But it's interesting. I do think it's sort of an interesting arc that she's on with the... And I love, again, even though this episode didn't really go there, I love that she's sort of now, like, super important. Like, she's other than Buffy, she's arguably the most important in the fighting evil thing. And that grew from her being this timid little Willow in season one. And I think that story has been really, really great. It's one of my favorite things. And again, like Buffy, like all the other characters in the show, what she does isn't always great. You know, she does and says things that you're like, oh no.
And she's definitely like powerful to be like attracting supernatural attention.
That was interesting. So we met, have we met DeHoffman before? I don't think so.
Have you guys seen him before? The vengeance demon master?
I don't think so. That I remember in any way.
But that was interesting because it was kind of like a gateway into learning a little bit more about Anya too. So were you guys sort of, what were your reactions to that?
I don't like Anya. So getting any more of her story, I felt it took away from the episode. But okay. Cool. Demon masters. There's a lot going on there. Great.
It's cool but that, like, she's kind of on the same path that Anya was on, though, right? Like, it's an interesting thing to throw Willow down this and say, oh, well, that's what happened to Anya 111 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's especially funny considering that Willow and Anya really don't like each other.
And we've also been saying that Willow needs someone. Like, she needs someone to help her because clearly if she's just like, meh, it didn't work and carries on with her life and there's all this, like, magic running amok, then she needs someone who's not Giles because Giles does not know everything and what's going on. So she needs a mentor who's not going to, like, you know, make her into a crazy boy killing demon, but also at the same time, yes, like, she does need some sort of guidance from anyone who knows what they're doing, even the person at the shop, maybe, like, they probably know a thing or two.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, because she is pretty much doing this alone. Like, she's gone way beyond what Giles ever was able to do. And now she's just floundering by herself. That's actually, I didn't really think about that. And of course, you could have said, oh, well, I know who could be her mentor. Amy! But no. So first of all, did you guys notice that Amy came back? Because the first time I watched it, I actually looked away at that point and totally missed it. So I had to go back. And second of all, yay? Was this the payoff you were hoping for?
Well, could you imagine being that actress and getting a call and it's like, we want you back, and then you come back and then you do one scene and they're like, okay, see you later, thank you. Like, I'm hoping that they called her and were like, okay, we only need you for this one scene in this one episode, but then you're actually coming back for good. So maybe we're a little bit closer to getting Amy back. But it is something that I was thinking about after the episode was I'm glad that Willow hasn't, like, been trying to do anything mm-hmm. on Amy because, like, yeah. you know, trying to, like, bring her back because she is aware that her magic is, like, not exactly up to snuff. So I just felt, like, a little bit of relief for Amy the Rat being like, okay, good. Willow's not actively trying to, like, you know, be like, well, you know what? I'm going to channel all my energy and pain and heartache into trying to make Amy come back and then accidentally killing her. So I'm kind of glad about that.
Yeah, as soon as we, like, the camera does a weird pan thing or something, and you see the edge of the cage in their room, and I'm like, oh, is that Amy the Rat? And, like, literally seconds later, Willow takes her out and is holding her on the bed, and it's like, oh, yes, it absolutely is. Like, it was kind of funny that it all came to fruition, but, yeah, I was happy to see Amy back. Like, it's good to know she's still there, even if she got a brief glimpse of not being a rat. Poor Amy.
Well, I have to say, this shot of Amy, this callback is, like, pretty much sums up the main reason I love Buffy, which is that they never forget anything on the show. Like, I'm not saying anything about the future of Amy, because that's obviously, you know, we'll see as we go. But what I just love how they have planned this for, like, two seasons, because she became a rat in season two, and they've kept her around as a rat, you know, or season three, maybe it was season three, to ostensibly to set up this moment of, oh, Amy, and then she's gone. And they expect their viewers to know what the hell's going on, because there was no, like, previously on, Amy is turning into a rat, like, blah, blah, blah. So I just think that is so spectacular, and I think that's why, like, when you watch the show, like, multiple times and you pick up on all of the little ways in which everything is weaved together, I think it's, like, it's just so brilliant, and it just makes for such a layered and dynamic universe that I just love going back to, and it's, you know, it's stuff like this that makes it all worth it to me. And Sander gets chased by demons. I feel like Ariana put this in here because she wants us to cheer. It was kind of funny.
Xander and Spike were, like, the highlights of this episode for me. Between Xander, like, reacting to the Spike Buffiness of it all, and Spike just being himself, they were definitely the highlights. Like, there were, you know, we had sad Willow at the beginning and all of that, but Xander getting chased by demons was entertaining. I like Xander, as opposed to a lot of people who have issues with him. Like, I really like him. I think he's dumb sometimes, and, you know, but he's always up for a challenge, and this week he got one, and I fully expected this to start with Anya being, like, creepily attracted to him. Like, we've already had some creepy Anya, like, she's been a little weird, but, like, I expected it to get ratcheted up a couple of steps because of this, and it didn't really, and then all of a sudden all of these crazy demons are attacking them and they have to fight back. But I would have liked them to kind of ratchet up her crazy just because of him being, you know, the demon magnet, like, since she was already attracted to him.
No, she's not a demon anymore.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Well, never mind then.
I mean, she sort of, I don't know, like, I don't know if she, what kind of, like, power or, like, what factors she has, but I get where you're going with it, but I'm not 100% sure, like, what she's meant to still have demon-wise, if you know
what okay.
I mean. I think what I sort of like is the past couple of episodes in Pangs, too, like, Anya has sort of gotten to be the more down-to-earth one against, like, crazy things happening to Xander. And I kind of think we need that, because Anya has been a little bit, like, she was a demon, then she was a human, and that was hard for her. So now we've sort of gotten to see her a little bit more chill. And I think that really works in terms of constructing her character. And I'm very curious, actually, because Brittany, you don't like Anya. What do you feel about her, Kristen?
I don't know. She's entertaining. She has been the last couple of episodes, so I don't, like, hate her. But I don't have any, like, loyalty to her either. If she ended up leaving or something, I wouldn't be upset.
Mm. It's not like an Oz situation. Where,
right, exactly.
Oh, Oz, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. She's not made it to Oz levels.
Oh,
I know, I'm sorry. I brought up the Oz, the O word. No, but I mean, it's a good point, and I think I'm with you on the Xander thing. Again, payoff, ultimate payoff. Look how far he's come. Like, I think that's a wonderful story. And what else? I mean, we kind of already talked about Buffy and Spike, and Ariana is aboard. But I guess that's kind of weird because it was literally just Willow making them making them do that thing. But I am totally on board with them working together more and having this weird antagonistic relationship that they definitely had even before the spell. Like when she's like holding the mug to his, like, he's one of my favorite, I'm not going to say it because I know it's someone's favorite scene, but it's definitely hilarious. And Giles in this episode, this is something that I just wanted to touch on really briefly. Giles is going through something really traumatic here. Like, he's losing his sight slowly, and finally he ends up completely blind. And I know they play it for comedy, but it's also really terrifying. And, like, again, Anthony Head is such a good understated actor because you can tell how upsetting this is for him. And that always really terrified me.
He will lose his most important relationship, his relationship with his books.
That's, yeah, exactly. Like, Giles losing his sight is, like, a terrifying prospect.
Yeah, I fully expected him to go, like, from 10 seeing to zero sight when she said it. Like, I was kind of surprised that it was gradual because at that point, like, it was, we just had started seeing her spell kick in. And so I was surprised that it was a gradual thing. But yeah, watching him go through it was really traumatic just because you start to see, like, the, am I crazy? I can't see this. Like, is there something wrong? Like, what is going on here? Like, he's trying to rationalize what's going on and play it off like his glasses are dirty or something's going on. Like, you see him the whole time trying to rationalize it. And it just, yeah, it would be terrifying.
It's really scary. And I guess that kind of brings us to the end of this discussion, unless you guys have anything else you want to bring up. Ariana really liked Buffy when she was under the spell. I think I agree a little bit more with Brittany that she was, like, too much. So let's move into our favorite scenes. Natalie, do you want to go first?
Mine was kind of Spike in the bath at the start when they're kind of mainly. I think that one of the others, I think Kristen wanted to talk about Buffy and Spike in that, same thing, in that bit. Yeah. But no, mine was more with Giles, before Buffy comes in. Like, I really love Giles and Spike together. Like, and Giles' sarcasm that's so dry that it's, like, barely sarcasm. But my also other moment was when he got out of the bath eventually and left, like, when he set himself free. I love that, like, he pulled the door in this big huff, but he, like, was really, just the way that he, like, dramatically, like, leant back inside to, like, grab his coat from the coat hook. And I liked I just liked the whole process that, like, he had to have arrived at the house and someone, like, had to hang up his coat, probably because he, like, bitched about it. Like, you know, like, hey, can you take care of my stuff? And then he was like, I'm going to dramatically tear my coat and go because, you know, everything about him is, like, the aesthetic, and I just found that hilarious for some reason.
And Kristen, yours is kind of similar.
Yeah. I love me a good antagonistic friendship, ? Yes. I love the Buffy Spike dynamic in the beginning here, like in the bathtub and with the mug, which says kiss the librarian, which is adorable. And like that whole scene was just really good fun. And I live for stuff like that. Like that's, you know, my favorite part of shows like this. So I will look forward to hopefully seeing more of that down the line.
Agreed. And mine, I was kind of ish going in chronological order in the episode. Mine is first of all, the proposal, which is just hysterically funny. And it comes so out of nowhere. And it's one of the best, like, I don't remember how I felt the first time I watched it, but definitely it's just so good. And it's such a great flip on what their relationship has been up until this point. And they couldn't have done it with any other pair of people on the show for this much comedic effect. And also that moment when Willow says, I bet he's just standing there. And then he's literally just standing there. I love everything about that. so much comedy in this episode. It's very funny. I think we had a comment saying this is the funniest episode of Buffy so far. And I definitely agree. And Brittany.
Mine was funny, but also not funny. It was when Buffy was saying, like, you know, my dad is kind of far away and you've kind of been like a father to me. And then Giles gets like really honored and touched by idea of like being the person to give her away. But then he's like, no, this is ridiculous. You're not marrying Spike and I'm going blind and I'm going to get some more scotch.
Yeah. But it's like that bit didn't come from the spell. Like, you know, if she was really getting married, she would ask him. And I just love it so much. I love them. And our favorite lines, I will just go first for this one, which is, first of all, kind of going along that Giles and Spike thing, you know, Giles asks, are you helping me? And Spike goes, well, it's almost like you're my father-in-law, isn't it? And I think that's so cute. And I think it's so cute that, like, okay, all Willow said was, why doesn't she just go marry him? She didn't say, why doesn't Spike just kind of be a nice guy and help them out? And I just think it's such an interesting thing to see Spike sort of, we kind of saw this already too when he was nice to Joyce when he was like in cahoots with Buffy. Like, he is not necessarily instinctively always going to go for the evil, like, where he can, you know, like, he actually, like, it makes sense for him. He's like, oh, well, I'm marrying Buffy. You're kind of like my father-in-law. Of course I'm going to help you out. And I love that about him so much. Ah, so good. And this is the kind of two, I kind of took two, which was when Buffy was talking to Riley and she goes, you'll really like him. Well, nobody really likes him. I don't even really like him, but I love him. I think that might sum up like a lot of people's feelings on Spike. And Natalie?
Yeah, mine was actually when she ran into Riley at the wedding dress store, which was pretty fantastic. But yeah, when He basically hears her, you know, rambling about Spike, and just the way that he says, it's late and I'm very tired now, as in, like, this conversation has just exhausted him. So I'm going to go far away and be away. Riley is by no means my fave, but I am enjoying him, and I found that very, very funny. So, yeah.
Agreed. And Kristen?
Well, my favorite was actually Brittany's line, and I was so sad to see that somebody had already claimed it, but my second favorite. my second favorite is it's Spike, Buffy, and Xander, and Spike says, what are you looking at? And Buffy says, the man I love. And Xander says, can I be blind too? Just, I really love Xander in this episode. He was good fun.
I agree. And Brittany, best line of the episode.
I got to the dock really early yesterday. Spike, when he's in the bathtub, and he's just like, passions is on, Timmy's down the well, and if you make me miss it, I'll... And Giles is like, do what? Lick me to death, and then just leave.
Hilarious. Makes sense that a character who's so passionate would have a favorite show called Passions.
He feeds on other people's drama.
Was Timmy the doll?
I believe so.
Yeah, like, Timmy was, like, the ventriloquist dummy that was... that show was weird. Anyway.
A real boy or somewhat like a real boy? Yeah.
Spike's just, you know, he's into his home comforts and, you know, he's intrinsically, you know, a big baby, basically. A big, loving baby who just happens to be wired evil, you know, because he's a vampire. But, yeah, I just find that very, very funny. And his obsession with soap operas and food and all that kind of stuff is very...
I also love the way he goes, it's TV time. Like, he was like, it's TV time. Telling as Giles, in, like...
As in, like, this is a regular thing.
Right, exactly. Like, this is the scheduled time of day where they move him to the living room so he can watch TV. Like, it just, yeah.
Okay, so I guess that brings us to the end of the Buffy episode, and we're going to move into Angel, which is the episode Hero. We're actually going to start on a fun note, though, because Ariana has written a wonderful synopsis that I believe Brittany is going to read out for us.
Yes, so I'm glad I read this early, because Ariana put in a lot of hard work to make this synopsis go to the melody of Holding Out for a Hero. Because she's a genius. I don't know where... I would like to spend an afternoon in her brain. Okay, so... In this episode, Doyle dies, Cordelia cries, and Angel sighs. Where have all the good men gone, and where are all the gods? Angel's the streetwise Hercules, ready to fight the rising odds. But who's the real dark knight upon a fiery steed? Come to find out, at night he'd toss and turn and dream of what we need. Half-demons need a hero. They need a hero before the end of the night. He's gotta be strong, and he's gotta be fast, and preferably get them out of there before the fight. They need a hero. Or else they're all dead from the big bright light. He's gotta be sure, and it's gotta be soon, and he's gotta have an awesome ex-wife. Somewhere after midnight, in Doyle's wildest nightmares, somewhere just beyond his reach, there's demon Nazis gelling up Angel's hair, racing on the boat deck up with Cordelia he'll meet. Apparently it doesn't take a Superman to sweep her off her feet. Doyle's a hero. Doyle's a hero who makes things right. He wasn't that strong and he wasn't that fast, but he'll keep them all from coming alight. Doyle's a hero. Doyle's a hero, even if he's more green than white. We were never sure that he'd make us swoon, but he'll redeemed himself by giving his life.
That was...
Whoosh! Take some water and chill out. Yay! Well, that was great. So I guess this is kind of where we start talking about hero. But after that, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. I did actually want to sort of share my fun, quote unquote, fun fact here, because as I said, I wanted to talk about hero for a very specific reason, which unfortunately has nothing to do with Bonnie Tyler's I Need a Hero. So very sad. But this was actually my first TV death ever. I must have been 12 or 13, because like this was back when I was like still in school, and it was a very like traumatic experience for me for like a lot of reasons. First of all, like this came at a time like in my life when there was a lot of like bad things and death and stuff happening around me. But it was also because, and this is something that I don't know if you guys know this, we haven't said anything, I feel like, kind of because it would have been like tangentially a spoiler, but the actor who played Doyle actually died a couple of years after he was on Angel, and the story is that he was fired because he basically got into drugs and stuff, and he never got out of the drugs. And so I was like, I'm like making it about me. I feel terrible, but it was my first ever TV death, and it hit me really, really hard. And I was just devastated, and I was crying. And then I was like, okay, but it's fine, because when people die on TV, they're not really dead. So I went on my computer and I looked up the actor, and he was dead. And it was so traumatic for me. And it may have something to do with why I still consider Angel a very, very traumatic show to this day. And then like a couple of years later, I caught, because the episode, like they aired every day in the afternoon on Danish TV. So the same episodes of Angel would air a lot because they would come after Buffy. And so I caught the episode a couple of times. I broke down in devastating tears every time because it was so horrific. And everything about this episode, like it's all dark, it's all very claustrophobic. It's a very uncomfortable episode for a lot of reasons. And I was watching it. I remember once I was watching it like on this woman's, because she was like minding me, and I was like watching it on her couch, and I was like devastated and sobbing. And then like she ended up dying, and like now her son is now my brother, and there's like all kind of stuff going on. So this episode for me is just like whoomp, very, very sad for me. I will say, in terms of the show Angel, I feel like there's a lot of reasons to get excited for what's coming next, but Doyle's death is tough for me. Even now, I was like crying when I was watching it and stuff. So that's my reaction to it. How were you guys? I'm curious to hear what Natalie felt when you watched it the first time, but also like how the newbie sort of experienced it. But I guess, Natalie, if you have any memories, if you remember the first time you saw it, if you knew it was coming, or...
I didn't know he was dead until you just said that just now.
Oh my God. I feel terrible. I thought everyone knew.
No, I didn't know that.
Okay.
Definitely takes out the thought, like, is Doyle coming back? No, definitely not.
Well, he died, like, a couple of years after this happened.
Yeah, but like now that actor. I know he got fired, I don't think he's coming back.
Okay, well, there you go. There you go. That's a... I don't even remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. What were you going to say, Mel?
So, no, I didn't even watch it with that in mind. The first time I watched it, I think I just was kind of like, what was the point of bringing in this character and, like, building it up to, like, a lead and then having him die, like, halfway through a season? Like, was it just... Is it meant to be some red herring or what? Like, but, you know, if so that was kind of my reaction the first time that it happened.
Well, I think actually, like, sorry to interrupt you. I was just going to say, I think actually, like, the stuff about him, like, having some problems, like, I don't want to go on record and say that's why he, but I know that they sort of, during the first season of Angel, they were definitely still trying to figure things out. And I think they figured out pretty early on that the Doyle Angel Cordelia constellation wasn't necessarily the best fit.
I mean, I thought it was okay.
Like, I thought it was good, yeah. But
I liked it. I liked how they were, like, I thought they were really funny together. Like, I thought they were a really good pair against Angel's ridiculousness. Like, I never disliked it. And I was always a bit, like, so, yeah, it was just a bit weird to me that would sort of just do that. And it's an interesting thing to do halfway through a season, halfway through a first season, because it's like, because you kind of like, how planned was this? Was this an arc planned from day one, or did they literally get to episode 8 and were like, we can't have this guy anymore, we've got to write him out really fast, if you know what I mean? Like, or was this planned from the start to be like, oh, we were attached to this person and now he's gone and it's going to mess up Angel or Hordy or whatever. Because, you know, you do get that in shows where, like, someone has to be written out for whatever reason. But you usually start writing a show. For example, this first 10 episodes of Angel, I'm sure, would have all been written and produced before the show went on air, so it wouldn't have been like, it was like a fan reaction, you know. It wouldn't have been like, fans hated Doyle, so we had to write him out, you know. Like, this would have been written before people saw it.
Right, well, I think what it is, and this is, there's a lot of, like, I was just trying to look it up, and newbies, please don't look at anything to do with this. There's a sort of thoughts or theories or rumors that are floating around is that they always plan to kill off Doyle. Joss Whedon sort of had this plan to kill him off because he wanted, it's kind of like, you know, when he killed Jesse off in the Buffy pilot and he wanted to include him in the main credits and everything. So he wanted to lose a main character, but because of everything that happened on set and stuff, they chose to speed it up. So maybe it would have been like a finale thing.
Yeah, like a end of the season one finale or something.
But killing him in the midpoint, like, however it came about, killing him, like, sort of out of the blue at the midpoint of the season, was a big shock, I think. And I don't know if anyone, and newbies, please feel free to chime in, if anyone saw it coming, like, even if you thought he might die, I guess you guys thought he was going to turn evil. But even if you thought
he was evil.
Even if you thought he was going to leave the show, like, it happening right now must have been a bit surprising.
It wasn't surprising because I just assumed he'd come back because, you know, like, this is my first real supernatural show where, like, you know, people can come back and get souls and lose souls and die and survive the underworld and come back and then walk in sunlight, but then can't walk in sunlight. So, the rules are a little, I never know what a rule is. So I don't know if, like, maybe they just killed the half-demon part of him, like the Horcrux, and then he's like, oh, now I'm totally human, and here I am. I was just living under a cave where I was, like, reborn, and I made my way back to Los Angeles. So,
well, it's interesting that you sort of came in with that approach, because I think that says a lot about the type of supernatural content that has come after Buffy and Angel. Not to say that that stuff wouldn't or would or wouldn't happen, but I think on Buffy and Angel, they're very sort of intent on making deaths, like, on giving them an impact. Like, Jenny Callender's death, for example, had that sort of same sort of resonance of, like, oh crap, she's really dead. And I think when you have this world set up of people that essentially live forever and that can come back and stuff, I feel like stuff like this is very important. And I feel bad that I kind of spoiled it, but not really, because then you would have been waiting for him.
Yeah, but then I guess that sort of, well, like I said, I don't really watch anything that has supernatural, but I guess through osmosis of just no one's ever actually
dead.
Yeah,
no one's ever really dead on the show. They always say that.
And so, like, it deflated the emotion I probably would have felt, because I really did just assume he was coming back. So maybe this episode would have been a little bit more meaningful had I really thought that he was dead.
Wow, that's so interesting too, because the way that they killed him, like with the hero's death and the beginning and the end and them being all sad, like that would have been totally undermined, like the emotion of that. If it was like, hey guys, I'm human now, like that would have been weird. It's funny that you, go on.
I definitely was in the
really
same...
interesting to me that you say that, Selena, actually. We'll talk at the end of the series about that statement. I'm really curious about that.
Okay.
I'm in the same boat as Brittany. Like, I just assumed that he'd be back, maybe based on, I think it was like season one that we were told that demons like never truly die. Like, she can kill them and they leave this world, but they're never dead. What? And so I swear we heard that at some point in the first season.
What?
Like,
not on the show I watched.
I maybe swear. On the other version. I will have to go back and find it. Like, first or second season somewhere, I swear somebody said they're not really dead. It's more like they're dispatched and then they take a couple thousand years to regenerate or something.
That's like, not the show. That's another show.
I swear it was first. Oh well, but
well, maybe it was. Maybe it was one particular kind of demon.
That may have been. But I could have sworn that was like the reality of the, you know, this view of them. So I was like, I was like, maybe there's a chance that like we may not see Doyle as we know him, but maybe we'll see like the full demon version of Doyle somewhere down the line, and. I didn't really say it out loud or anything, but it was kind of just something in the back of my head. Like, we were not going to see human Doyle again, because that's the part that the light killed, but maybe we'll see the demon part.
Well, that could still happen. Like, that's not, because that has nothing to do with the actor.
Right, but I would still imagine he would have some of the likeness, since even when he was in demon form, he still had some of Doyle's likeness. Like, he wasn't completely different person. It was still the same actor, just in makeup.
This is so interesting, because I'm like sitting here like, this is one of the biggest traumas of my TV viewing experience. And you guys are like, but it didn't really.
No,
it's
like,
such weird. No, but like, that's how you came into this.
And so I will say, it took me by surprise because of how lighthearted the Buffy episode was with this.
Yeah.
I fully did not expect Angels to be as gut-wrenching as it was. Like, I just didn't see it coming. At the end of the episode, I just kept sitting there talking to Karen, like, I don't like it. I hate it. This episode sucked. I don't like it at all. Like, I was so mad about it. Like, it just, it did. It took me by surprise. I really didn't see this coming. And then, poof, you know, Doyle's gone. Literally, poof, Doyle's gone.
Literally, yeah.
And, like, going off of what Kristen said, I totally agree. You watch Buffy and you're like, oh, this is so playful and fun. And then it's like Nazis and power and eliminating race and Doyle's dead. And I'm like, holy crap.
That's kind of like,
why
that's
are we doing
going to be like a recurring feeling.
Yeah. I feel like. Do you think, because they did air like concurrently, which is like why we're watching them in this order. And sometimes it was slightly mixed up. Like, I believe there was one season of Angel that started the week before. So it's like it goes Angel 401 and then or whatever it was, you know, Buffy 701, like where it's the other way around. But regardless, we're not up to that yet. Do you think that it should be more crossed over in tone? Like that it should have been planned? Like, like if you're sitting there watching them both one after the other this week, like that there has to be a flow in tone, like, well, between the two shows?
This is actually one of the reasons that I argued against us doing it this way, and not because I don't think there's a lot of merit to watching them like one of each, but why I sort of wanted us to at least do two and two, because for me personally it is very jarring to go from Buffy to Angel. And I sort of find myself, it's kind of like when you're reading Lord of the Rings and when you're with Aragorn and those people, you're like, yeah, this is the best. And then you have to change. You're like, oh, I don't want to read about those people. And then by the time you get to the end of that chapter, you're like, oh, but now I don't want to leave. And that's kind of how I feel. Like I start an episode of Buffy and I'm like, oh, but it's so light compared to Angel. And then I get to the end of it and I'm like, yay, Buffy is amazing. And then I have to go to Angel and I sort of start the process all over again because it is so tonally different.
Yeah, but I don't mind watching them back to back because I guess that is how people watch them when they were live.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the authentic experience. Yeah.
And also we're watching this in an age where I can watch Buffy and then watch Angel 2 days later. So I do have that option, which I did with this. I started Angel and it was really heavy and I'm like, forget this, I'm watching this later. And so I did. I watched it like a day and a half later. Plus, I had to watch it at night because it was too bright in my room to watch it. It was so dark. I was like, I have to watch this with no lights on because I can't see it.
Yes. And that's like what you know, Buffy takes place during the day and Angel takes place during the night. That's sort of very sort of apparent in the visuals of it. But no, and I agree. And I don't definitely, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do it this way. I'm just saying that was one of the detracting factors for me when I was weighing it up in my mind. That said, it's nice that you can sort of, unless there's like a specific reason to start with one show over another, it's nice that you can sort of pick and choose the mood you're in. Because I was actually, I watched this episode first because I knew I would get so depressed. And then I saved Something Blue for after because that would cheer me up.
Yeah, I think the problem that newbies have is that the one time I decided to catch up and I watched Angel, I watched two Angels in a row and it just happened to be a crossover episode. And they're like, well, this is the reason why you have to watch them the way we told you. And I'm like, okay. So I messed up once and I'm never doing it again.
We'll
have to see after season two.
Complex. Like there's lists. They're slightly spoilery, but there's lists that are like, okay, so you can watch these ones, Now you have to stop because there's a crossover. Yeah. Like, you know, there's more complex, but this is the simplest way to avoid problems.
That's true. Yeah. That is true. But yeah, so, I mean, in general, I guess just sort of talking about the episode overall, as we've kind of talked about, this is a very dark episode. It's a very claustrophobic episode. It's a very close a lot of darkness and a lot of small rooms. And I don't know, because I know that, like, Kristen, you said you hated this episode, and I'm wondering if that was just because you didn't like the story or if it was because it made you feel uncomfortable or...
Oh, no, I don't actually hate the episode. It's just, like, okay. I hate it. It's like, I hate this episode because I just didn't see it coming. And when it, when something gets me like that, like I just, I don't want to like it. I don't want to. It was a good episode. It was well done. I liked the actual like story and all of that in the episode, but I just didn't like the ending.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that makes sense. I think it's a good episode too. I think it's it's one of those episodes that kind of makes my stomach hurt, and not just because of like the horrible childhood trauma, but also just in general, like you get the feeling at least, but I guess you guys didn't, but I definitely got the feeling that something bad is going to happen and it hits you, you know, it pokes at you when you're watching it and makes you really uncomfortable.
Yeah, a few listeners said this on Twitter. They were like, well, this was the episode that really set Angel apart from Buffy. And I agree with that 100%. I just didn't think it was going to be like, okay, here's the line and we are going so far away from it. Yep. Like, it was
for sure
really heavy. Like, there was no introductory, like, okay, we're easing back into Angel, sort of like we did apart from, like, you know, you had the crossover and then we sort of eased out of the crossover, then we crossed over again. So I was like ready to be eased out of the crossover again, and it was like, nope, one line about Buffy, you're going to be mopey, nope, okay, great, now we're going to go fight.
But knowing that Doyle's death is a death, you know, as it is, does that sort of change your opinion on it at all, or
no, because I still, like, now we're definitely separated from Buffy, which I appreciated in the beginning, regardless, because that's what I wanted anyway. And now we have to deal with the fallout of Angel realizing that, like, you know, he can lose anyone at any time, and it's not, Buffy is not the be-all, end-all in his life. He has other people he needs to keep close to him and protect and realize what they're going through. It's not all about him and Buffy. And I think killing Doyle off was a great, I mean, it was not great. I'm sorry. That's phrased wrong. It was,
but it's true. It is.
It was a good move for the advancement of Angel and Cordelia's character. Cause now even Cordelia is like, oh, this person who really cared about me was right in front of me the whole time. And I am just so focused on other things and having this picture of what's perfect in my head. And maybe that's not. So she has a lot of self-examining to do. Angel now has a lot to, like, you know, figure out, and how the show's going to move forward, I'm actually interested in, even though it's kind of sad that Doyle had to go in order to make that Angel, like, you know, make that big leap.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, I think there's only so far they could go with Doyle. And they kind of already took him there. You know, I think that episode with his ex-wife was basically a way to sort of, okay, this is Doyle's story. There you go.
That's just a great, another, made me think of another thing, is that now the procedural element is going to change because we don't have these visions to rely on. So that is really interesting.
That's interesting because this episode, the demon species, the listers or whatever they were called, you know, they had their whole chosen one or whatever it was that was going to save them. Do we think that that is still meant to be Angel? Because they keep dropping us into weird supernatural scenarios. Like when he went to the Oracle, you know, last episode, and we were like, oh, okay, what? Like, we've never heard of this before. Are we meant to know what this is? And then this week, obviously, they're mentioning this prophecy guy who sort of by merit of circumstance ended up being Doyle, I guess. If that's,
but I think it was supposed to be Doyle. I think he was the hero. He was, if this prophecy was accurate, I think it was always supposed to be Doyle. They just assumed it was Angel. Even Doyle assumed it was Angel. But I think this episode kind of proved
this. Why did they assume it was Angel? That's my question. Like,
because he looks more like a hero.
Is that it? Or is it tied into all of the other supernatural nonsense that seems to be surrounding him with the powers that be?
It very well could be. I always assumed, because these people, like these demons, were quote unquote just demons. They didn't necessarily have any connection to any higher power. They were just living their lives, and they had a prophecy within their community. And I think that what I took away from it is that Doyle, sort of in this episode, he has a lot of sort of, he compares himself to Angel a lot. He had that whole speech to what's his face, that like Angel was the real hero. And even at the end, I think when he sacrifices himself, I think it's because he deems himself, and we have a point in the doc too from Ariana, that he deems himself less valuable than Angel is. But I think like the whole thing about him ending up being the hero, the titular hero of the episode, and sort of being the quote unquote chosen one, was meant to signify that in the end he was the prince that was promised. So to speak, though he doesn't look and act like a hero, and even though everyone just looks at Angel and sees, oh, it must be him, but in the end it turns out being the other guy. Kind of like some people thought was going to happen with Harry and Neville in that series.
Yeah.
So I guess sort of going into that a little bit more of Doyle, and maybe Doyle and Cordelia, because I know you brought that up too, Brittany, that they were sort of on the brink of something and they actually finally shared their first kiss. And how do you guys feel about that? Were you sort of shipping them, or?
I mean, did you think Cordy was going to react like that? Like when he finally told her, like, did you think she was going to be like, ew, or she was going to be like, why did you even care? Like, you know.
I was mad that he didn't tell her. Like, I really wanted Doyle to tell Cordy, and I thought we were getting there, but, you know, with things had to be sped up, clearly, like, all right, now it's time for her to find out. And so how that all went down, I was not exactly, like, super happy about it, but then, like, when we finally got the Cordy-Doyle scene after that, I was like, okay, at least we've addressed it. She's like, yeah, you're an idiot. Why didn't you just tell me? And we're moving on. Like, you know, it seemed really sudden and brief for all of the buildup that it's taken to get there.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I guess the point was that it wasn't such a big deal to her as he sort of assumed it would be. Although I still don't think she would have gone out with him because it didn't seem like she wanted to.
She asks him, like, well, you just asked me out already.
I feel like she was already getting there in the episode with the ex-wife. I feel like she was getting there. And, you know, because obviously she'd already gone, you know, had that thing in the other episode. You know, I swore with Xander Harris, and, you know, never another fixer-upper.
Oh, that's true. She's already
thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And I always found it bizarre, though, that, like, Doyle, you know, that number one, that, like, you know, that Doyle was considered so, like, subpar. Like, there's nothing, like, wrong with him. He's a bit awkward, but I think it changed in the moment where, I forget which episode it was, one or two episodes ago, where someone says, oh, you know, like, that he likes her or whatever, and Cordy's like, please, we just mess around, like, you know, as in that she thought that they're like, oh, I hit on you as a joke and I reject you as a joke. Like, she thought that whole process was, like, not real from him, and then she learned that it was, and I think that that's when it started changing for her.
That's true.
Yeah.
As Ariana says, too bad he's dead.
would you guys want, like, if you were about to die, or if someone was about to die and there was this unfulfilled, like, love thing between you, would you actually want, like, that last first kiss, or, like, you know, last night together when you knew for sure that the person was about to die? Or, like, people who get married to someone, like, with terminal illness, like, you know, right before they die or whatever, like, I don't know, like, would you like that circumstance? Do you think it's, like, better than nothing, or would you, like, just rather not go there?
Yeah, I think it's, like, a human part of the human experience, you know. At the end of the day, like, everything else, like, is irrelevant when you die anyway, so you might as well. I don't know.
And it's sort of the, like, no regrets thing, not necessarily for the person who's going to be passing, that is, you know, looking death in the face, but for the person who's left behind, like, if they spent their last moments with this person they love, you know, they have that to hold on to, rather than we spent the last day of our relationship or the last day of his life or her life, you know, walking around or watching TV, you know, like, they spent it together in love, celebrating their love. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I feel like it would make it worse.
Yeah, for Cordelia, it's different because she's basically opened up, like, her grief is going to be a lot more now than it would have been otherwise, which I guess is kind of what you were saying.
She also would have had to have dealt with, like, I wish he would have known, I wish we would have, you know, like, at least in this, they had a moment, it kind of addressed all of the unspoken, so she knows that in the end he knew that she cared.
Mm-hmm.
And so she doesn't have to deal with all of this, like, unresolved, I wish I could have told him, could it have changed things, you know, kind of stuff. She doesn't have to deal with any of that.
That's true. Ariana also asked, there was a weird spirit thing that passed between them when they kissed. What is that?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it was like a blue light.
I thought it was like the shine from the round thing behind them. But
it looked like a special effect. I'm with her. It was like a blue glow or something. It was really weird.
Okay. Weird.
I cannot say that I noticed that, but we'll see.
Okay, so we kind of touched on this. Why did Doyle sacrifice himself? I kind of already shared my opinion. I don't know if you newbies, if you guys have anything else additionally. What did you think about his big sacrifice? Other than it was so, it looked so painful in his skin and it's so traumatic. My poor 12-year-old self.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately he believed that the world needs Angel more than the world needed him. And so he, you know, threw himself on the grenade, basically. And I don't think that's true, but, you know, for Doyle, I think that was always true. He always thought that Angel was this big, you know, bigger than life hero that, you know, the world needs him. And Angel just got done sacrificing his human life with Buffy because the world needs them. And so you've got, you know, all of this going on. I just, Doyle saw it as the world needs him and I can do this.
I know. Actually, that moment, that scene, which I don't think any of us have, but when he, like, Angel is telling him about Buffy and he goes, like, you had everything you ever wanted and you gave it back. Like, I feel like, first of all, that's, like, the line he's delivered best in this whole show. That was brilliant acting, but also just, oh, I think you're right, though. I think it's, like, he ultimately, at the end of the day, didn't think he had what it took, but ironically, by doing what he did, he proved himself to be the ultimate, like, hero of the show so far. And that kind of brings us into the video, like the whole thing that is actually my favorite scene too, so I won't say too much about it now, but which was the beginning and end of the episode, which is similar actually to what they did in I Will Remember You, when they came back to the same scene but with new meaning to it. So in the beginning of the episode, we had Doyle sort of kind of funny, like helping Cordelia out, and he couldn't read and he thought it said rats and stuff. And then they used that bit at the end, and suddenly we have him, his final moments captured on video, and having Cordy and Angel watch it too, and ending on his face, and that pause and uncertainty, I thought was gorgeous and beautiful. And if I hadn't already been crying, that's when I would have been crying.
I thought it was really well done. Like, I thought that end video was, like, the using that again at the end.
Yeah.
It stylistically was quite unusual, like, for this show. Like, it was, like, a different, or for Buffy, you know, either, that it was done in, like, more of a, this is the kind of thing you'd expect in like a medical drama or like a, you know, like a straight drama show death reminiscent episode, if you know what I mean. It's like that kind of tactic as opposed to, you know, a supernatural death, which is usually handled a bit differently, with has bit of a different like kind of standard of like, you know, how they film and how they frame things. So it's kind of a tactic or a trope or whatever you want to call it that I wouldn't really have expected from a genre show, but I think that it works well.
I agree. It's very effective.
Yeah, I think it would have driven it home more if I thought Doyle was dead.
I know. Again,
I feel like everything I want to say, like, yeah, it was really moving and stuff, but I just didn't connect because I really didn't think that he was dead, so I feel bad.
It's so still so interesting to me that you guys, like, I just assumed we were going into this discussion that this was going to be like, oh, no, Doyle is dead. But what is funny is that Ariana, I think she kind of assumed that he was dead because her thoughts are like, final thoughts on Doyle, you know, he's glad he's gone, blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of funny that it seems like Ariana was like, saw it as a permanent death.
Yeah, maybe she also got this sense that of what we were kind of commenting on earlier with like, how far can this trio go before we're kind of tapped out of story?
Right. And that is kind of how I feel. Like, I am very upset that Doyle is dead, and I like this episode will forever be very traumatic. But as a character, I don't necessarily, like, I kind of feel like it's nice that he was on the show and his death is really meaningful, but he couldn't have kept my interest, I don't think.
Why do you say that? Just out of curiosity. I just don't really have any feelings either way that strong. Like, all of you guys are like, oh, I don't know where he would have gone, but I'm like, you know,
you
I
never
it,
know.
It might,
yeah.
It might just be because we already know Angel and Cordy. Like, we know what they're like already. But, like, is, you know, any new character coming into the show, like, long term? Like, for example, like, Kate. We've only had two or three episodes with Kate. But, like, is she a character that you'd like to be there episode to episode, like, every week? And,
no,
and that you feel
I,
like her
no,
story
absolutely
would...
not.
Okay. All right.
You know, there's just characters that you feel like you can connect to more easily than others. And I think we touched on it maybe a little bit too in Buffy, and it's kind of an unfair comparison, but like someone like Oz, for example, immediately charmed everyone. And then you have someone like Anya where people are like, oh, I don't really feel like I know her well enough. And maybe that's just it for me with Doyle. I feel like his story and his character and his arc just wasn't necessarily something that I was particularly interested in exploring. But that's not to say if he'd stuck around by season four, he might have been my favorite character.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
very
I mean.
Possible.
I'm mm-hmm. just curious, like, you know, because Angel and Cordy, you know, the two leads that we already have attachment to, like what kind of new brand new character characters would work with them, you know, and whether
there are characters that do work with them better and quicker than I feel like Doyle did, but I think it's just a personal thing, you know. And maybe I'm just excited.
No, it's fair enough. I'm just curious as to like if another brand new character, like if we would have reacted to any brand new character from the very start of the show like this, or if it was just that Doyle was actually subpar, or if it was that.
I think so.
We would have struggled with any new character.
That's a very possibility. I think for me, there are characters that I struggle with on both Buffy and Angel that I never really warm to, and then there are characters that I immediately attach myself to. And I just feel like the kind of chemistry he had with Cordy and Angel, for me, just didn't feel as strong as other characters' chemistry with these characters feel even after just a couple of episodes. So I think it's just like after like 10 episodes, I feel like I had a good sense of what his limits were. But it could have been totally, we'll never know, basically. But he wasn't one of the characters that I was like, yeah, you know. And I feel like some characters make a better first impression than he does. So final thoughts from everyone else, especially the newbies. You know, Ariana asks, did you enjoy him? Do you think his character arc progressed well? Are you secretly glad he's gone? Like, what do you feel? Do you kind of agree that he maybe had gone as far as he could? Or do you agree with Natalie? Or
I mean, his death kind of took me by surprise. So I clearly thought he was going to be around for a while. I didn't expect to see him go. I figured that this will they won't they thing between him and Cordy was going to take a little longer to play out, and that, you know, somewhere down the line we would find out exactly
how evil.
We'd find out exactly how he became a half demon, half human, and like what that really means, or maybe he'd have some sort of power. Like, I thought there was a long story still coming for him. I didn't see him leaving. So I mean, I like Doyle. He wasn't a major, like, I love him, he's amazing character, but I liked his sense of humor. I liked him with Cordy, so I will miss him for sure.
I do want to say I liked him too. Like, it's absolutely not to say that I dislike him at all. I just, you know, he just didn't strike me as a particularly, anyway, doesn't matter. Brittany?
Yeah, I didn't mind Doyle. I think what Natalie was saying was a really great point where, had we had three more seasons of him, would I have felt differently? Probably. But also, it was, you now that, like, in retrospect, like, thinking back to, like, oh, well, we had his wife's story, and we kind of know what his struggle was there, so, like, we could check that box off, and, like, oh, now we know his relationship with, like, his own demon kind and all of that, we could check that box off. And, well, what else is there? Like, we know he has visions, and that's a thing. Do we care? We know that he knows about the oracles. We already got that whole story. Like, there's not really that much. I think even you can feel it, like, once they finish the story with Doyle at the center, like, they didn't leave any, like, lingering threads to be like, oh, we're going to come back to this. Like, I always felt like, okay, we're done with him and his ex-wife. Oh, okay, we're done with him and the demons. Oh, okay, we're done with him and his connection with the oracles. There wasn't any loose ends for Doyle to pick up on, where with, like, Angel, while we feel like we have the whole story, it doesn't feel complete, whereas Doyle's little bits always felt complete. And there was like, oh, okay, we don't really need to explore anything more with him for now. Let's get back to Angel and Cordelia.
Right. And I think I agree with you on that. Like, and it's not like, I think a lot of times Buffy characters, like, they, even if they seem random at the start, they end up, like, if they stick around, great things end up happening with them. So I kind of think that's like a thing of saying, well, I'm sure something interesting would have happened with Doyle eventually. And if they hadn't been planning on killing him off, probably they would have left his storylines more open than they did, because they were trying to wrap him up. You know, again, like, it's hard to tell, but I just kind of feel like everything, and it's like me saying, oh, I know what happens, but like everything that happens after and the impact that Doyle's death like had on me, as traumatic as it was, I feel like it made for such a good episode, especially because it came so early on in the show, and it kind of allowed the writers to maybe go some places that they kind of wanted to go a little bit more and stuff like that. So I just think all in all, his death sort of served the show well, even though I wouldn't have minded him sticking around and becoming something more So that's kind of where I land on it. Now that Doyle is dead, what do you guys think is coming up next? Ariana is super excited for what's coming up next, as seen by her all caps reaction.
Netflix made us super excited.
I know. Stupid, spoilery Netflix. See, this is one of the things where I'm like, I would have just wanted to watch it in the episode if it was me, but I guess it gives you a reason to be excited.
No, I'm glad that this was like the best Netflix spoiler. Like, I agree with Ariana brought it up in our little group that like this was one where it was totally fine, because coming out of this episode, I think we needed a boost, and the Netflix spoiler really helped. So good job, Netflix.
I'm excited. So moving into our favorite scenes, I guess mine is, again, like we were talking about, the beginning and end repetitions of Doyle's video, and ending with what becomes a very emotional send-off. And I will so say, for all my talk of me being okay with the fact that he's gone from the show, when he says, like, am I done? Is that it? And stuff, I'm like, no, please come back. Because it is so heartbreaking. And I just, as Natalie also has said, like, the way that they did that and used that trope or that storytelling way of bracketing the episode by humor and tragedy with the exact same scene is really masterful. And I know that Tim Minear was one of the writers in this episode, and he's a big Angel writer. So very nice to see from him. And you can sort of tell how effective stuff like that is. So very, very impressed. And moving in a slightly different direction, Natalie.
Well, look, I was my favorite part of the episode. Well, kind of. I love the video usage as well, but was Angel's Nazi hair. How when he joined Hydra, he had the comb, like like he had the combed hair, and just I really would like to know, like, did Cordy do that for him? Like, because he doesn't have a mirror to like tidy his hair with his mousse and stuff like that. So I enjoyed that ridiculousness and the dramatic Nazi uniforms, and I feel like there's a whole other episode that we, you know, didn't talk about in terms of like what the hell these guys are, like the scourge, and then you know the demon, the species of demons, and like, you know, whether what they were doing was the right thing. I mean, obviously it was the right thing, and Doyle died to save it, but like, you know, would have Buffy reacted in the same way? Like, you know, we've never really seen Buffy like deal with like humans who are bitten by a werewolf. Oh, they're still innocent, but we've never seen her deal with like demons who right, are exactly. not evil, you know. And so yeah, Angel going undercover at this Nazi Hydra, you know, wannabe Red Skull association was quite interesting to me, because as we sort of discussed, one of my favorite things about this world is what makes a person and what doesn't. So, yeah.
Yeah, same. Agreed. Kristen.
Yes. So my initial reaction.
I was really scared when I saw this. I was like, oh no.
No, my initial reaction, and I told Karen, I'm leaving this in the doc, was to write, none, I hate this episode, and ugh, no. But honestly, I didn't.
I thought you meant that you like hated it. Like,
I
you,
thought so too.
That you meant like I legitimately am going to come here and drag it, not just that I was upset by it or whatever.
No, I was upset by it because, again, it took me by surprise. No, but I really liked the Cordy Doyle scene, especially looking back on the episode. I like that scene a lot, because if we would have gotten Doyle's sacrifice without him having a moment to kind of end all of this will they, won't they with Cordy, like if we had just had her find out after the fact that he was half demon, and like have to see her kind of deal with that in the after Doyle world, it would have been strange. It would have been weird. I'm really glad we got this scene. It was lighthearted and fun, especially right before the big, you know, sadness reveal, but it was a really good scene. And I always love those two. So good fun for me.
Yay. And Brittany, oh, we didn't really talk about him.
My favorite scene was any time that Kirk, Sean Gunn, was playing a demon, because I could not look at them because they make me anxious, but I could listen to Kirk talk.
But it's like you couldn't. I mean, I did not know that he was going to be in this episode. But now I've watched Gilmore Girls. The minute I heard his voice, I was like, oh, it's Kirk.
Yeah.
But you couldn't tell.
Did I never like, I could not see is? Him.
Sean Gunn? No, I don't think so.
Should I know who this is? Like,
have you? You've seen Guardians. You've seen Guardians. He plays like that doofy sidekick to Yanto.
Okay.
If that helps.
That's, I don't know.
That's Sean
brother. Bailey. His brother is James Gunn, who makes Guardians.
He's a director. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's a bit more context. But what is he about Gilmore Girls? Like, why do you
he's like one of the best characters.
Kirk.
He's like the town weirdo who like has 600,000 jobs. Like anytime you walk in somewhere, he's working there. And he's
fantastic. Is he like the cabbage? Is he like the cabbage merchant in Avatar?
No, because he has a different job every single episode.
But he's basically like kind of comic relief, even though at this point where I'm at too, he has like some story. But he's basically like he comes in and delivers a line and has like the audience in the stitches, and then he leaves. Like he's a very very funny character, and
yeah,
very
and he does get some story.
Intense, like emotional, and even though yeah, it's great.
And in this show, was he the cousin that came to Doyle for like in the flashback?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So minor role.
That whole arc, like of Doyle, of like, you know, like that he had that whole rejection of his demon thing and you know, that he had to make up for that by doing this, I thought was pretty interesting. And I like
the racism allegory is very on the nose, I find.
Yeah.
But interesting.
Yeah. But I liked the family of demons that he was helping, like as well, like the species of demons or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, I agree. And I like the young guy, like everything Ariana said this too, like their struggle felt so real and so like intense. Like everyone in this episode seemed to matter a lot, which sort of increased the intensity level. So moving into our favorite lines, mine is the scene with kind of like the one Kristen has as her favorite scene, but just the line from that when Cordy has found out that Doyle is a demon and she goes, I've rejected you way before now. So you're half demon, big whoop. I can't believe you'd think I care about that. I work for a vampire. Hello. What do you think I am? Superficial? Oh, Cordy. Perfect reaction. And it's so true. Like, she's superficial, but she's also really not. And
How we thought everyone would... Was everyone thinking that she would react like this? Or, like, did anyone think that she would react like, ew, that's such a Buffy Summers thing to do. Like, I would never, like, God, like, you know,
I think it could go either way, which is what is so interesting about Cordelia's character, is that you never really know, like... She's clearly evolving a lot, but you never really know if she's going to have a relapse, you know?
Yeah, she's the most unpredictable character I've seen in a long time. When a new situation is presented to her, I never know if she's going to, like, take it on or whether she's going to be like, nope, not dealing, leaving, bye-bye, see you later. Like, so for me, I really didn't know how she was going to react to Doyle. And depending on how long he had been around, you know, was going to be around, it could have been a huge thing, you know, her dealing with him being half demon and what that means to her. But I like that this is the way they went about it.
And Natalie, I'm going to save your line for last, so I'm going to go to Kristen.
All right, mine was from the scene where Cordelia like shows up to the Heidi place where the demon family was hiding out, and she steps into the hallway and this demon walks out and she goes, while this may look like a popular brand of breath freshener, it's really a cunningly disguised demon repellent. And she starts spraying it, and the demon goes, wintergreen.
Yes, that was amazing.
I died. Like, I could not catch my breath. I was laughing so hard. It was just random, but hysterical. And I love Cordy.
Yeah. And Brittany?
Mine was Angel being a badass, because I like when Angel is really a badass. And he's like making that deal with the guy and he's like, oh, well, you bit him. I saw you did. He's like, no, no, I never bit him. And then he's like, I wasn't hungry. It's like, oh, yes.
Yeah. How, How often do you think Angel goes around, like, pretending to be, like, a really scary vampire, like, in order to, like, because he clearly has this whole underground life, like, you know, with all of these, he's got all of these connections and he's got all of that. So, like, you know, how often do you think people, you know, he has to pretend to be a big scary guy instead of, like, a total dork, like, you know?
Well, he can pull it off well, so hopefully he does it all the time. It'll make me feel better about him.
Yeah. I enjoy it.
Let's round off with the fitting final quote.
So mine was the end video. So just the cold close to the episode when Angel and Cordy are watching back their tape of Doyle, where he kind of uncertainly says, "No, is that it? Am I done?" And the cold, you know, cut to black and, yes, he is. You get to rest now, Doyle, or whatever. And yeah, I feel like that. Yes, it did have the correct impact on me, or you know, at least more impact than these guys. Like not assuming that he was not coming back, like not assuming that his death wasn't permanent. But I just really liked the use of that.
If you didn't think his death was permanent, this was literally like, is that it? Am I done? And he's like asking the audience, so am I coming back? Like, what's happening? Which is definitely not the tone they were going for.
Yeah, possibly not.
But this was also back when character deaths just were not that common. And when
character resurrections
did not happen, I don't think audiences would have been like, oh, he's probably going to come back, because that didn't really happen. But character deaths like that, like main character deaths, just it hadn't even happened on Buffy yet, or it hadn't, like, because you wouldn't, I know you guys like to think of Jenny Calendar as like a main character, but she really wasn't.
I suppose so, not, no.
And Buffy, like, Buffy herself doesn't count, and I guess Angel, he came back, so he did kind of come back, I guess, to you guys' point. But this kind of stuff, like, this was a big deal when it happened. I mean, you know, I was going to say I remember. I don't, but I remember reading about it being a big deal when it happened. Mm. Oh, that line. And, like, and that way it holds on him, like, am I done? And he just kind of looks into the camera like, oh, no, I can't. So that brings us to the end of the episode, guys. Very, very good. In my opinion, a very, very good, memorable couple of episodes. I think they often make their respective shows' top 10 lists of best episodes. Not saying that they would necessarily be on mine, but they are on a lot of people's. We are running a little long, but we want to rush through contact or listener feedback as well to get you guys' thoughts in on these episodes. So the contact information, if you want to leave feedback on Buffy and Angel, spoiler-free, please. You can do that by emailing rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us @re_watchable. You can find this post on hyperbole.com. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. iTunes reviews. If you rate us 5 stars, then Selena will jump in a giant chandelier to save us all from impending doom. So please do that, guys. Oh, 2 thumbs up. That would be spectacular. And then I could be like, is that it? Am I done? And then you'd never hear me on the podcast before. Yay! So listener feedback. If we go Brittany, Kristen, and Natalie. And then just start over.
Sure. So our first Twitter is from Nikki L. at Hallows Witch, who says, I just want Caitlin not to feel alone in her love for Buffy and Angel. They may be melodramatic, but I love them always. Well, that's nice. I'm glad Caitlin has a support system because it's not coming from me or Adriana.
I just want to say, I'm definitely with Caitlin. I like Buffy and Angel. Like, I don't not like other characters with them, too, but I really like them. And they feel epic and, you know, so I'm with you guys there.
They're chill. They're just never, like, they never just, like, hang out and, like, are casual and normal together, if you know what I mean. It's always too intense. And it's actually interesting because the conversation Buffy has at the beginning of Something Blue with Willow about, like, you know, oh, can there ever really be, like, passion in like a nice relationship. Again, mm-hmm. I feel like it's not just like Spike and his like heart-rending drama. I feel like Buffy, the show, imbibed me with very unhealthy views about what a good relationship was. For real, I am not saying this to be funny.
Yeah, like, well, I'm like, sorry I'm laughing, but it's true. Like, it is sort of...
Like, I feel like, you know, that kind of thing, that kind of what it was valuing... Mm-hmm. And what worked out and what didn't work out and what was considered a priority and what was considered real love and what you would do for love and what was important, especially when it's coming out of Buffy's mouth, like, I feel like it really led me down some, like, paths that were wrong. So thanks for that, guys. But,
yeah. I think the only thing that saved me was that I never, like, I sort of have a very sort of distance, like I was saying, to the ships in Buffy. Like, I'm never, like, particularly, like, I'm a so-and-so shipper. Like, I'm sort of very into a certain dynamic without sort of being really attached to that ship. And I will say I do agree as well with the Buffy and Angel thing. Like, it's not necessarily, I have said, I think they get too melodramatic, but I enjoy what they represent.
All right. Our next tweet comes from Emmy Foss at Emmy Classic, and she says, "Here is the first episode of Angel that feels like a separate show and not a Buffy's knockoff. It makes brave choices, and I love it."
Agreed.
Yes. I think we pretty much agree with that one.
Yeah, so Raven, who is lots_of_awesome, says, "Watch this week's episodes, but having a hard time containing myself from watching next week. My favorite Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode ever." It's a big one. It is a famous, big, strange, possibly award-winning, if not award-winning, definitely... did something that's never really been done before on television episode.
So. It was nominated at least. But yeah, I think it's so funny about that episode. It's the only episode in the entire series to be nominated for an Emmy in Outstanding Writing for a Drama Series. And cinematography as well, even though people have often said other episodes should have been nominated instead. I think the funny thing about Hush, or the episode, is that, well, that's the title, is that it's not like, it took me a long time before I liked it. When I was younger, I didn't like it for reasons I won't go into now, but I just did not like it. It wasn't until I watched it when I was an adult where I truly began to realize why it was such an iconic episode. I was like, oh my God.
But, this is one of the only episodes I ever saw live, actually. I remember I remember exactly where I was when I saw it. I was out at, we have like a big fair, like a big, it's kind of an agricultural show / carnival, Sydney Royal Easter show, if anyone Australian is listening. And I went with a big group of friends from high school. I would have been in about ninth grade, and we all went back to one friend's house after that and watched this episode. Or it might not have been live, but it might have literally been like taped from that day or something like that, but it was at the time that it was coming out. And I remember very clearly the first time that I watched this episode and the room and everything about it. So
cool.
It is a big one.
And Brittany,
it's a lot of pressure for next week.
I know. That's why I was like, it's okay if you don't like it, because I didn't like it the first time I watched it.
But we have another
tweet. Oh, yeah. I don't even know if I like it. It's just like a really big deal.
Yeah.
We have another tweet from Ashley at Raikou Stark, who says, "When I was a kid, I'd always thought Hero was a season finale. I have a feeling newbies are going to like what comes next." And that is accurate. We are excited about what's coming next.
And Kristen, if you take
that. Sure. And our last bit of feedback is a comment from Hypable from LAG, or LAG, it looks like. They said, "Anya is quickly becoming one of my favorite characters on Buffy. I never would have imagined that the monster of the week from The Wish would evolve into Xander's girlfriend. Also, am I the only one who feels that the powers that be are shaping up to be Angel's season one big bad?"
Interesting.
Definitely interesting.
So that is all of our listener feedback from this week. Thank you so much to everyone who wrote in, and please do so for next week as well. We're going to wrap up with Brittany's brainstorms / Kristen's kinetic abilities.
We've played this game before. It doesn't end well.
One day we'll come up with it. But this is for like the newbies' predictions for Buffy's Hush and Angel parting gifts.
Okay, so Hush, it's groundbreaking and innovative, and who knows what happens. I guess maybe Buffy cannot stop talking because everyone has to yell hush at her. I don't know.
Amazing.
Which I do sometimes when I'm watching the show. So
I was going to say, I was going to go the other way and like maybe someone can't talk. I don't know. Like if they've been hushed, then they can't communicate or something. I don't know. That was my guess. I have no idea.
And parting gifts?
Don't really care what it's about. Don't care how it happens, but Leslie Wyndham Price is coming to Angel.
What? Okay. Oh my God.
Really don't care about the plot. Just want him there and to get started.
My only thing was parting gifts makes me think that maybe like they have to deal with something regarding Doyle. Like there's something left behind that they have to, one last little thing from him that they have to deal with.
That's interesting. And Wesley brings it to them.
Yes. Oh, wow. This is so great. Basically, it's like a parting gift is this, the arrival of Wesley. I feel like it's so bad we're spoiling it, but the Netflix does totally spoil it, so there you go.
Yeah.
That's where everyone
held it in until the end of this episode, so right now everyone can just go and start watching it.
I actually can't remember anything about his arrival, except that he arrives.
Fun.
Because I have obviously very vivid memories of him on Buffy, and then I have memories of him, how he ends up, but I don't have memories of how he arrives in Angel, so it's going to be interesting to watch that transition. I'm excited.
Definitely. I am very excited. So check back next week and make sure you subscribe on iTunes so you never miss an episode, or find us on hypepool.com in the podcast section. Until next time, my name is Selena.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Oh,
is that it? Are we done?
Oh.
Yeah. Oh,
that hurts.
It does.